welcome to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program as we come your way every Saturday and for 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're rebroadcast on a2zen.fm, and you'll need to check their listings for the days and times. And then we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So lots of opportunities for you to find out about what's going on and how to get involved and connect with our guests and what they're making available to you. Today's program, as we are on the heels, if you will, or the toe, I've never gotten that phrase right, of Christmas. It's just around the corner. I thought this would be a very appropriate time to feature this guest and the CDs, plural, as well as the book and books, plural, that will be coming out in February. Extraordinary project, extraordinary gentleman, and even more so, and I think he would agree, extraordinary contributors, real people to this project, this work, and it is entitled, I'll call it the project, it's called For the Sender, and it started out as 4 letters, 12 songs, and 1 story. My guest, Alex Woodard, a Grammy Award-winning songwriter and a singer, and we thank you so much for joining us here on the program today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
The music that you have made available through this book is quite extraordinary, because what you've done is you've taken letters, and we'll get into the letters in a moment, and turned them into songs. I like the phrase that I think maybe you're the one that turned the phrase, that you took the letters, turned them into songs, and the songs are actually prayers, which is really kind of a neat way of looking at these letters. And these are letters of great emotion, of great drama, if you will, and turmoil in certain individuals' lives. And we'll get into more specifics, but I have to say that I received this material a year ago, and apparently it wasn't the right time. Maybe it was still too close for me. The focal point, from what I can see, is surrounding the loss of your dog.
Yes, that was kind of an interesting story, the way that this whole thing unfolded, this For the Sender project, because that's not how it started. It didn't start with me wanting to write a book about the loss of my dog and these letters and the lyrics and the backstories. It's a cliche these days to say, but it really evolved quite organically.
Hello, my friend. It's me again, writing words that I can't send you. Autumn's cold, the leaves are old, and letting go, but not me. It's when we met, and it's when you you left.
first letter I got was from a woman named Emily, and I was kind of, you know, I'd been going at it in the music business for a long time and was a little disillusioned and burned out, and I got this letter from this woman that was just beautiful, and it inspired me to write a song about it with a friend of mine named Sean Watkins, and we wrote this song called For the Center. And as Sean's actually the one that came up with the phrase that a letter's like a prayer and that it's more for the center. And I sent that to Emily, and she wrote back and this beautiful thank you note. And it kept me going. And I wrote two more songs, and that song, but you know, that letter turned into two letters, into three, into four. And before long, I had this album. This album's worth the material. And I was trying to figure out a way to put it all together to make sense, you know, so someone could, you know, just hold something in their hand with these songs and these letters and these backstories. And I was here in my kitchen in San Diego, looking at the pile of lyrics when I realized that I had my own letter. And it was a letter that I'd written to my dog the day she died. I hand wrote a 3-page letter and left it, you know, next to her body when she died. And a friend had taken care of the details after that, and I'd forgotten about the letter. And so, you know, in a rush, I ran downstairs and found the letter in a box with her ashes. And that's when the whole thing kind of came full circle. And that's when that thread kind of started weaving itself through the story in the book, because at that point I really hadn't written anything, you know, as far as a book goes, and it really evolved from there. And so the project, when I began it, I didn't know I was beginning anything, you know. I mean, this was just a song about a letter, and then as it kind of picked up steam and started taking shape, you know, I kind of tried to steer the ship to somewhere, still not really knowing where it was. And even, you know, even now when people ask, I mean, you kind of referred to it earlier. It's as you were thinking of how to define it, and you just called it a project, right? And that's true, because it encompasses so many different things that it's hard to nail it down. It's not just an album, and it's not just a book. And it's not just some letters, you know. I mean, it's a lot of different things wrapped into one, which is both, you know, makes it beautiful, but also makes it a challenge to define.
Indeed. I also commend you, as well as the letter writers, for your courage to read what you wrote, because this is also an audiobook for the first book. I'm sitting here listening, and all of a sudden the voice has changed. I'm going, oh, he must have gotten some actors. And then I thought, wait a minute.
Yeah, right.
Wait a minute. No, I don't think so. And then, of course, you come on, and you're reading the letter you wrote.
Right.
To your dog.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm already welling up here, because I remember when my wife and I listened to that, and the emotion in your voice.
Right.
And, of course, it brought back all of the pain and sorrow.
Of course.
Of our loss. And then when we did finally decide after 6 months to sort of try to, in a manner of speaking, fill the dog hole or void, not replace Connor, as we got to know Angus, one of the things went through my mind was, man, I wish Connor was alive. He would love this dog. It's like they would be great friends, you know.
Right. I actually, you know, before Kona died, I had, it was a couple years before, and I'm sure she had cancer at the time, and I didn't know it, but I did get another Labrador, and her name, she's pretty much the opposite of Kona. Her name is Stella, and, you know, Kona was very grumpy about Stella at first, and my hope was that, you know, some sort of osmosis was going to happen, you know, from one dog to the other, and there would be a little piece of Kona in this dog. And,
and
you know, it did not happen for a long time until I started seeing signs of it just a couple of years ago in the new dog. But it definitely, for me at least, it very much eased my transition from one animal to the next. And And I kind of talk about that, and I refer to it when I'm doing these events live, because, you know, for some people, there's a video. The way that these events generally work is that I'll present the letters with a video. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's the actual letter writers reading these letters to you, right? And
yeah.
then we'll play the songs about the letters. That's essentially how it works. And the last one generally is a video of my dog, Kona, with me reading that letter over top of it. And as you said, it's pretty emotive, and it's difficult for me now, you know, even now, to listen to.
Dear Kona, thank you for being with me for so long. The times I was most alone, I was never really alone because you were always there. I'm so sad you're leaving, but I know it's the right thing at the right time. I love you with everything I have, and I'm so grateful this lasted as long as it did. I remember picking you up in Utah, and you were so tiny and new. So much life has happened since then. Oregon, then to Seattle, then to Manhattan Beach, then home to Leucadia. I'm happy that you've spent time here in this house. You saw its first Christmas, as well as so many good times and good people. I'm grateful for that. All of those girlfriends, none of them could compete. You hated to be left alone. Remember when you clawed through the door, when you were locked in the downstairs at 406? Or how you learned to open the bedroom window and climb out on the roof and would just be up there barking for me to come home? You never wanted to be alone, and I suppose I never did either, because I took you everywhere with me. I left you in the hotel room in Santa Barbara, and you barked until you ended up in the manager's office, and all the Kona hair all over the place. You made a mark everywhere and on everyone who knew you. There are a lot of people that are sad today because you're leaving. I suppose that the one thing that never leaves is the pile of memories. But your leaving has made me feel like I'm living deeper. Like maybe the shell around my heart has cracked a little. And I can actually feel something again. When I was in Boston, I didn't yet know you, but I had your name written down on a piece of paper, along with a few other choices. You were kind of a beacon shining from the west, and when I left New England, I was leaving for you. So much growing up for both of us. You were patient with all my wandering and sometimes questionable decision-making. I was patient with your frustration at being alone. We finally landed here in Leucadia, which has been your home for almost half your life. A good 5 or 6 years, maybe 4. Actually, 5 years, almost to the day. I will miss your smiling face when I come home. I will miss your just being here with me. You've been a part of me for so long that I don't know what I was like before you. I suppose that's the closing of a chapter. Thank you for being here. I love you, Alex.
So this is the table. But he sits down at the table, and she been gone about a year. He says the cancer took her sudden, but her spirit keeps her near, right here. Says the world keeps on turning, like you don't know that she's gone. And so I hold on to moments, and I turn the radio on, and we dance around the room like we used to do. And then she's go back to being me. And I turn down the lights. Sometimes I stare at the ceiling. Sometimes I close my eyes. We dance around the room like we used to do. And then she's in my arms again.
She's in my arms.
Boy,
again.
I'm telling you, we dance around the room. And then the music ends. Every time I think she's next to me. Every time she makes me believe. He gets up from the table and says if heaven's up to me, she's gonna meet me down at the old house. And slowly we'll dance around the room like we used to do. And then she's in my arms again.
She's in my arms.
Boy,
again.
I'm telling you, we'll dance around the room. And then that music, it'll never end. And it's a silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother.
Making everyone in the room cry,
mm-hmm.
right? This, and I get up there kind of towards the end of the video, and I say, you know, you're not, everyone in this room isn't crying because they knew Kona, you know? None of them knew my dog.
Right.
That's pretty much a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where that one story concept comes in, because they all have their own loss that they're connecting to somehow. And it could be in watching that video. It could be the loss of a child, or the loss of a partner, or of a dream, or of a job, or of a friend, or relationship, whatever, you know, whatever it is to them, that's what's making them connect to that video and making them cry. It's not because they knew my dog. It's because they have that same kind of loss somewhere in their life. And that's how we're all part of the same conversation, you know, and the same kind of story. That's where that whole idea of the 12 letters, you know, 12 songs and 4 letters and 1 story comes from. That's where it originated. And that all these letters that I got and these songs and all this stuff, they're all talking about the same thing. It's just different names.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, we just call these victories and these tragedies and these triumphs. We call them different things, but
yeah.
they at their core, are the same.
I'm curious, as we are getting close to our first break here in the program, there is a song that we are very privileged, and my great thanks and gratitude to you for allowing us to feature it, called Celebration. Tell us about the origins of that song, and we will go to break with that song.
Well, I got a letter from Scarlett Lewis, who was the woman who lost her son at Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. And we wrote three songs about it. And this is actually very interesting because we wrote three songs about it. I wrote one called Bullet, which was about, it's a song sung from the perspective of the bullet that killed the boy. And the message of that song is that the bullet didn't, you know, decide where it went, right? Someone else sent the bullet somewhere, and it could have ended up anywhere. You know, it could have ended up in a salute across the bow of a boat. This bullet could have, but it ended up, you know, being sent to this boy. It's kind of a, you know, that's a heavier message, and it's you know, that's kind of sad. The next song was called So You Would Know, and that song was about all these messages that Jesse, who's the son, had left for his mom, Scarlett. And then the third song was a song of celebration, which when Scarlett sent me these letters, she included a note to me that said something to the effect that, you know, she looked at Jesse's life as this song that she, you know, God had given her the words for, and she had to write the music. It was really beautiful the way that she put it. It might have been the other way around. Maybe God gave her the words and she wrote whatever. So anyway, I wrote a song with my friend here, Molly Jensen, about that kind of celebratory kind of approach, you know, taking that approach to his life. And we literally took a lot of the words right out of the letter, you know, the things that she, how she described him. And it was really beautifully done. So, like I said, we went and played these songs for her last week. And for the first two, for Bullet and So You Would Know, she was there and she was very present. But there was no sign of, she wasn't crying and there wasn't that kind of emotion. But then when we played Celebration, we got like, I don't know, you'll hear it in the song here coming up. Towards the end, it's just the word celebration over and over and over. And she started singing it with us. And then the whole room started singing it. And then by the time the song was done, she was crying. But she said that the tears weren't for sadness. They were tears of happiness, because this is how she was looking at his life. You know, it's just ginormous celebration of, you know, of beauty and of, you know, this kid that in the photos, this song you're going to hear is set to a video montage of mm-hmm. photos of Jesse, and it's online now. And you can tell this kid was just exuberant, and he was full of life, and he was just living so deeply every, you know, it looked like every minute of the day. And so Scarlett, the mom, her approach to this whole thing was that, you know, his life was so so deeply lived that it needs to be celebrated now and not continuously mourned and not continuously, you know, grieved over. Mm-hmm. And it was such a beautiful moment for us there in New York, because here is this woman who suffered one of the deepest losses you can imagine, but and you can tell that she's grieving, and you can tell that she's, you know, going through all these processes you need to go through. But she also has this just incredible light about her that, you know, she was lucky to have her son here while she did. And, you know, the lessons that he's going to teach now, you know, in his passing, you know, the way that she put it was, she was hoping this tragedy at Sandy Hook, and the sacrifice that, you know, her son made and these other kids made and the adults, she was hoping that shined a light on a deficit in the world, and which is a great way to put it. And that, you know, that's some sort of dark corner where we need to have some light shined.
Yeah.
So to play this song for her at the, you know, as the third one in a trio of songs, and have her, you know, be in tears of joy and remembrance was really, really, really special. And that's why why I sent it to you, so you guys can check it out really before anybody else.
Celebration is the title of the song. It is from the forthcoming second half, if you will, or second portion of the project, For the Sender. And it's Alex Woodard's work, and we're so grateful that he's taking the time to share with us. And here is Celebration. We'll be back following the song. Talking with Alex Woodard. He's a Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter. He's put together a project, as I've sort of dubbed it, For the Sender, four letters, 12 songs, and one story. And it sort of is interesting because in many of the programs we've done on this broadcast, talking about the duality of life and ways in which to get through it in terms of the ups and the downs. You know, when I'm going through challenges or struggles, I have to remind myself of the great ancient wisdom teachings that say, this is just an illusion. It's just an illusion. This isn't real. This isn't real. The downside to that is I have to learn how to say that when things are good too. This is just an illusion.
True.
But then you go back to the, if you will, the reality, and that is this stuff is happening and you can't just divorce yourself from it because and it's part of this existence, part of what we're all going through. And you are quite fortunate that you have this wonderful avenue of music to as an outlet.
That's true.
And, yet I know that, as you say, you spend some time in certain areas and, the old emotions are, they almost feel as fresh as the day that they happened. I still see the images of that day for me, a year and a half ago. And, the thing that I do too is I create the movies in my head. Often mm-hmm. when I've read someone's book and I say, that ought to be a movie. And I remember when I read Dan Brown's novels, Da Vinci Code and so forth, and that movie ran in my head. Now, I wasn't even aware that the movie was coming out. And what struck me so when I saw the movies was the main character, played by Tom Hanks, looked like the character in my movie.
I believe it.
I'm listening to these letters and I'm listening to what's happening, what they're describing, and I am seeing these events unfold. And, it's like, oh, I wish I could be there to, in these kinds of instances, be there to comfort these people. And yet I think what's unique about this project is that you, because you're one of the letter writers, and the others, you comfort us.
That's kind of the idea. The idea is to somehow, someone brought this up. I said earlier that when we do these events, by the time I get to the last video, everybody's crying, right?
It's
generally, people stand up and everyone's crying. And someone pointed out one time, and then it's happened several times since then, that the reason that they feel safe in that environment, when they're watching this video and they're like, oh my God, I can't cry. And they look over to the right and that person's already, is already crying and already showing emotion. And then the whole room starts to, it's almost like a safe place where you can feel this emotion and express it and get it out and not worry about it. If that makes sense. And I never thought of that, relative to this project, about creating a space where people can feel those things and be okay. But I'm very, I'm very happy that that's happened because, as you were kind of alluding to earlier with the feeling of emotion and, the duality of life, the other way to think about it is that we've got so little time here. On the planet, really, in the overall scheme of things. And who knows what happens later? Nobody really knows, but we all have our beliefs. But your time here is what you have, and it's so, so sweetly short, So why not feel those emotions deeply and express those emotions deeply? And, there's really nothing to lose. A lot of people don't do it because I think they're afraid of other people's reactions or they don't know what's going to happen on the other side of expressing that stuff. And if you, just give yourself a chance, just want to do it, there's like a whole different kind of release on the other side of that. And you're here, like I said, for such a short period of time, why not feel stuff deeply and move through it? That's kind of why you're here. And it's not to like wallow in the sadness all the time or, I talk about it in the next book a lot because, now that I'm part of this Hay House family, I'm at a lot of these events and a lot of these kind of, self-help mantras are thrown around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about how so many people, it seems like they want to run from, the rain and the storms and all that in their life, right? And they think that if they just kind of stay ahead of them, that it's not going to impact them. And I see it all the time. And mm-hmm. that's not, in my opinion, that's not living, because you're putting on this false sense of happiness and, oh my gosh, this is great and everything's fine and turning everything into, something positive. when sometimes it's just not, you know. I mean, you're talking about the loss of your dog, Connor, right? I mean, that's not, you don't need to put a positive spin on that. I mean, that was hard. It's sad. It's that part of life, and that's what it is. You know what I mean? There's no need to kind of shape it into something else. And so I think that the project, you know, the For the Sender kind of lets you and lets the reader and lets the listener and lets the letter writer, everyone can kind of work through these emotions again. I mean, we just had Scarlett. I just came back from New York where I played some songs for Scarlett Lewis, who lost her son at Sandy Hook a year ago. And as part of playing these songs for her, I asked her to read the letter that she sent me, because, you know, we'll create another presentation with that for people to see. And, you know, she read her letter and she was reliving it again. And I, as she was reading, I saw, that's where this idea of For the Sender comes from, because you can see how much these letters really are written more for the sender than they are for the person receiving it. You know, in this case, she wrote it to her son, Jesse, the boy who was killed, and very much in an adult kind of voice. And it was clearly written for her more than for Jesse. And as she was reading it, you could see her processing it and see her living it. And, you know, that's like, I don't know, I think that's something that these days a lot of folks try to, like I said, run away from a little bit, you know, and kind of get away from the sadness. And sometimes the sadness is just part of the deal, you know. And I remember a quote from the prophet, from Khalil Gibran, and I can't remember it exactly, but basically it says that, you know, while joy is sitting, you know, at your desk, sadness is asleep on your bed, you know, or something like that. And that's true. I mean, you don't have one without the other. There's also a really great one from the prophet that says something to the effect that, you know, your sadness carves the well that will one day hold your joy, right?
Oh,
which
wow.
is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I really, really love that. And I think about that a lot, because the depth to which you can feel that sadness is also the depth to which you'll feel that kind of joy.
We're talking with Alex Woodard, Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter. He's put together this project that came out about a year or so ago called For the Sender, 4 letters, 12 songs, 1 story. And there's more coming, because you have another book that's going to be coming out in February 2014.
That's right. February 25th it comes out. We just have gotten everything sorted out as far as the books at the printers and the music's done, and it's all kind of moving forward now. PBS has got a really great relationship with Wayne Dyer, and Wayne's, you know, he's a great man, but a great author and spiritual teacher. And he recently did a special for PBS that featured the next book, which was an honor for me to be a part of my next book. He's featured in it, and since this whole process has been happening for me, when I started the project, like I said, I didn't even know it was going to be a book by the end of the day, and then there it was, and I certainly didn't think I was going to keep doing it. But Hay House, a copy ended up on the CEO Reed Tracy's desk, and he ended up loving it and sent it to Wayne, and Wayne loved it. And one thing led to another. So I've been able to develop this really special relationship with Wayne, and he's been a big support for me. So I was going to have this book done in January, you know, like next month. And when Wayne said that, that he wanted to include it in his PBS special, that kind of up the schedule a little bit. So I spent most of the last, you know, 4 to 6 months just pounding away, because not only do you have to, you know, I have to get the letters and write the songs about them and write the book, we also have to record the songs. There's like a lot behind this thing. And so the whole first half of this year until about July, that's what I was doing. And then we got to the kind of actual production process with the editing of the book and all that stuff. So finally it's wrapping up here, and I'm looking forward to that coming out in February. I think it's kind of a logical well, not logical, but it's the next step in this project.
The progression is right there,
It's, which is cool, you know, and I can see it happening in my own life and how it's reflecting in the next book, too.
Now, is there going to be an audiobook treatment to book two?
You know, we don't know that yet. I was hoping to have to know that already, but we're not sure. No matter what, there will be something.
Well, either way, it should be pretty fabulous.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, this next one is about twice as long as that first book.
And, oh, wow. Fantastic.
It's a bit more of a story. I mean, it's all true, but, you know, there's actually, it's a bit more linear than the first book was.
Well, as we read through the first book, and of course listened to the songs and listened to the audiobook, I was thinking, what do you mean four letters? There can't be just four letters. Obviously, they were the focal point of the beginning of the book, but I'm sitting here thinking, no, this guy has to have mail sacks all over his house filled with letters from people who heard about For the Sender and said, hey, this would really be neat to be put in song form, because here's what happened, and then the way goes the story. And again, we all have these extraordinary events that happen in our lives. Now, you said in our last segment before we went to the song Celebration that you wrote three songs based upon this woman's letter regarding the loss of her son at Sandy Hook. And I'm wondering, does that happen often when you get one of these letters that the songs just kind of, they come flooding out from this letter to you?
Yeah, it really, if you read enough interviews with songwriters and people that have been at it for a while, they'll tell you that the best ones are very fast. And they generally, not always, but they generally come very quickly. And that's the case with these letters. There's something... Oftentimes, you know, like I said, for Celebration, we took, you know, words right out of her letter. Like, they're like in the chorus there, it's not a traditional chorus. It's these different words that she came up with. And it's the same thing, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a sad letter or a letter of loss, or, you know, even some of these that we get are unbridled with joy and with happiness. The songs that come from them write themselves. It's more like you're just letting something work through you. You know, for me, I write some of them on my own, and some of them I write with friends. But regardless, they kind of it's not like some kind of rehashing over and over and taking a year and a half to get a song done. You know, I mean, these things happen very quickly. Like that Bullet song. That's part of the next project. That's also about the Sandy Hook. I mean, that was 15 minutes, you know, and it's one of the songs that I'm most proud to have written. And I, you know, it took 15 minutes, you know, and there wasn't like a huge preparation process involved, or some kind of, you know, centering or all this, you know, these techniques that people try to use.
Right.
I just sat down at the piano and it just came.
Looking for that cathartic moment, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting.
That's right.
And it never comes. I have writer's block.
Right.
Yeah, right. I know that in my own way, I just in terms of writing things, that journaling for that matter, they say just, you know, write the first thing that comes out. And for some stupid reason, my mind goes to, I need to write this in case somebody reads this, so I better write it. And it's like, well, that just defeated the whole purpose of journaling, you know,
right.
Whereas with what you're dealing with in the regards to these letters, I mean, we're talking about letters of heartfelt emotion. It's a deep part of who and what we are, which I think is truly connected to, if you will, that higher self in all of us. So when someone shares with you, Alex, through these letters, then you end up in this fashion, just tapping into that source, and it comes out in these songs, and it's just remarkable.
Well, you know, a lot of that, and that's what the kind of first book was about, in a way, was getting out of my own way, right?
Yeah.
Because I spent so long chasing this dream as a musician, and it was all about me. It was my face on all the albums. It was, you know, I was having to sell myself constantly, and that can burn you out pretty quickly. And once I started doing this project about these letters, all of a sudden, the stories weren't about me anymore.
Right.
You know? And the songs weren't about me. And half the time, or more than half the time, it wasn't even me singing them anymore. You know, I was having friends, you know, that were kind of farther along in the music business than me and had recognizable voices doing it, because I didn't want to, I just was trying to get out of my own way as much as possible and kind of be more behind the curtain than anything. And I think that that's a big reason that the project, the first book and the album turned out like it did, was because, or even became anything, was because I just got out of my own way and let whatever you want to call it, source, higher self, you know, consciousness, it, whatever, work through me, instead of worrying about kind of the egocentric kind of, well, this has got to be about me kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a big shift for me, you know, and you have to go, I think you have to, with a lot of these things, you have to go to the extreme to find the balance in the middle. Right. And so for so long, it was all about me. And then that For the Cinder project came along, and it was finally not about me at all.
Right.
You know, I removed myself completely, and now I'm starting to shift back to, you know, some kind of happy medium, you know, balance back in the middle again.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm kind of watching myself take that journey from almost a, you know, kind of a bird's eye view, and it's kind of fun to watch.
Well, I was going to say it probably is, and it actually answers a question I was about to ask you in terms of how this project in particular has changed you, and that's quite significant for each one of us. I mean, you know, there are some people who, you know, they dream of being in the limelight and being focused on and having the spotlight put on them and all of those kinds of things and being the center of attention. You know, I think we all have that desire. Doing this radio program, I think I do as well. But one of the lessons that I learned, you know, many years back in this process was if the interview, if you could sit there and slice up the interview and put the guest over here on one side and the host over here on one side, and if it measured out the host 50% or more of the interview, it was a bad interview because the listeners right. did not tune in to hear the host.
Right, right.
So
that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. This is, I think, again, quite remarkable. And obviously, I would say that if something, I'll be honest with you, I can see this. I'm not necessarily throwing ideas at you. It's just stuff that comes in my mind. I can actually see like a mini series of sorts where each letter is focused on and each of the little episodes ends with the song that was written. I can just see that happening.
Right. I we've thought about, you know, there's a couple things in development now. One is a Broadway play.
Oh, wow.
Book, which is cool.
Yeah.
But the other, we've looked at TV and trying to figure out a way to present this, you know, and I always had the idea that we could find these different causes or, you know, these different people, but it's almost like an extreme home makeover, but with music where, you know, there's someone that needs help and they send in a letter and they don't know it, but we do a song about it and you hear the whole backstory. This person needs help. And then, you know, the song, the show ends with us, showing up at their house and playing the song for them. And then a percentage of the proceeds on the back end of that song goes to this person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they end up getting an income stream. And so it's definitely on the radar out there. It's just, it's one of those chicken and egg things.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants to do anything until everybody wants to do something.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's the story of a lot of media and the entertainment business.
And the project project grows larger and larger for Alex Woodard.
Right.
Where does it takes on a life of its own?
That's right. And,
yeah.
And that's, you know, that's another one of those getting out of the way things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to let it. I can't like put some kind of, that's the thing. It's funny. I'm trying to remember what interview I did this. I was talking about this, and I think it was actually for Hay House. We were talking about vision boards, right?
And oh yeah.
I said that I thought they were ridiculous because, you know, what makes you believe that what you want for yourself is what you need? You know, that's a very egocentric way of looking at things. You know, for you to believe that what you want is actually what you're supposed to be doing, at least in my experience, is mm-hmm. is kind of a false road to take. And I tell you that because I spent, you know, 15 years going after what I thought my dream was, right? And what I thought I was supposed to be doing. And only to find myself, you know, kind of broken down and, you know, mid-30s and thinking, what am I doing? What, you know, all this time? And without having those dreams really realized. And then to let go of that and have this project that you and I are talking about happen, which is realizing, you know, a more beautiful contribution than I could have ever done, you know, than I ever thought I could make. Like, I never thought I would be doing this. This wasn't like, you alluded to it earlier when you were talking about people that have these dreams of being in the limelight or these dreams of, you know, of kind of being famous or whatever, you know. It's what makes you think that you know what's best for you.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes you need to let, and that's why vision boards are, you know, in my opinion, silly, because they're kind of focused on what you want, right? And what you want isn't what you need all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? And so to go after that, you know, not saying don't go after your dreams and don't do anything. I'm not saying that. But
sure.
I am saying that there's something else working out there that if you can kind of let go and like tap into, you could find that what you're supposed to be doing is something that's way more beautiful than something you ever could have dreamed of.
Exactly.
You know, or
yeah.
could have imagined.
Exactly. So. Yeah, I... and you had no way of knowing this. We have actually one of these dream boards up on the back, the inside of our back door that goes out into the backyard. And every once in a while I look up at it. Most of the stuff has actually been achieved. Most
right.
of the stuff has been. But I take a look at that and I say to myself, whether it's happened or not, you know, either it's going to happen or it's not. And if it's going
That's
to
correct.
Happen, I have to be patient because right. just because I want it, like you say, doesn't mean that that's what's best for me. And
that's
let's
right.
say that it is best for me. It may not be best for me today. Or
that's right. That's exactly right. That's a great way to look at it. The timing is everything. You know, it might need, you know, if you're a woman and you've got a dream board and it's got, you know, a husband on it or a man or a family or whatever, right? And so every day you're looking at that and you're thinking, wow, that where I want that, why isn't it here? Why isn't it here? It's putting some kind of timing on it that you can't manufacture that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't like make that up, you know, and if that's supposed to happen, beautiful, you know, it will happen, but it's not going to happen because you are, you know, and this is the other thing, which you just kind of said about these dream boards, you know, or sorry, like whatever you put on there actually coming to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the way that I think about it is that if I really want something to happen, and I, you know, this is my want and my desire, and it does, then that's great. But it may have happened at the expense of something even better.
Yeah,
happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. Makes, yeah,
and so that really makes me encourages me to be letting go constantly in the moment and letting what's going to be. You know, instead
yeah.
of putting my own deal on it, because like I said, I don't always know that what's best for me, you know, what's best for me. And I mean, we all have that experience. You have, everyone has
yeah.
where you really wanted something and you went after it and you know, it could be something small, it could be something big, and then you get it and you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, wait, I thought this was going to make me happy, or I thought
mm-hmm.
that this was going to lead to this or whatever, you know, and so for me, it's kind of this constant reminder that, you know, yeah, you might get what you want, but that might have happened at the expense of what you need.
Exactly. And, yeah. And,
you
know? And I think that the key is, from my perspective anyway, is to tap into your own intuition or, if you will, your higher self, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's going to really guide you to the things that you really need at the time that you need them. I've been fortunate. I'm going to guess that you as well. Even with the ups and the downs in our lives, those, and you use the term storm. What came to mind when you said that was, well, shouldn't I just go headlong into it and I'll be out the other side before you know it? It may not be easy. It may be hard and it may be emotionally draining, but, you know, I get through it and I'm done with it and I can move on to sunny skies. But it's one of those phrases is, and you alluded to it, getting out of your own way. I've heard this many times that we want to control the process. And what we need to do is we need to become part of the process.
That's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah.
That's very, you have to be, I mean, you know, somebody sent me a quote the other day about, you know, like you can't stop the waves. You have to just learn to surf them, right?
It's, yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Rather than trying to control a wave, you learn to ride it. It's the same. It's what you're saying. Right?
Yeah. I was watching, speaking of waves rolling, and I was watching this one program, and they had this huge crest coming in. There was nothing on the land that this was going to be moving into and then coming back out of again. And I said, well, now that's the kind of tsunami that I could take, because it's not the wave going in that's going to kill you. It's the debris that it picks up when it goes back out again. And there,
yeah,
and there was no debris on the land. I said, oh, that's one I can deal with. But,
that's right.
You know, we have those, and we have them in different parts of this country, in different parts of the world. You know, we just experienced, of course, as far as downsides, you know, of course, the loss of, as my wife likes to put it, another one of those light workers. We lost Mandela
right.
Just a week or so ago. And yet I've heard it said, oh, no, he's not done. He'll be working his magic from the other side. And I certainly hope so, because we can use all the help that we can get. I'm curious as to where you come from, what you were raised with spiritually or religiously.
I came from a conservative background, but not religiously conservative. My folks are not religious. I'd say my mom's atheist, and my dad is probably, I think my dad thinks there's something out there, but I don't think that, I certainly wasn't a part of any organized religion growing up. I was sent to church when I was a kid to kind of keep me out of trouble, you know, like that was the idea, was to keep me out of trouble and to kind of have some moral grounding, I guess. But it was a congregational church, meaning that it was non-denominational.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't. And as soon as, you know, my parents thought we were old enough to make the call as to whether or not we wanted to go, me and my sister, then they let us make the call. And I think I was probably 14, I guess, maybe, when they said, well, you know, you're kind of hit that point where you can decide what you want to do. And I stopped going. And I do think that I got some sort of grounding there. But it wasn't really a spiritual thing for me as much. I think that my real spiritual turn came when I was in college at UCLA, and somebody gave me a book called Way of the Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman, and that changed everything for me. And that kind of set me on this path that I've been on, that I've strayed from quite a bit, you know, as we all do. And it was my early, I don't know, I was like 19 or 20 when I got that Dan Millman. And, you know, as real life starts kicking in, it gets harder and harder to kind of maintain some of those spiritual values and ways of living until you realize that that's what they're there for, because, you know, when life starts really kicking in, that's when you really need them. And I've kind of come back to those, you know, in the last, I don't know, 4 or 7 years. But my real religious grounding was definitely not. It wasn't something that I was forced to do, and it wasn't something that I wanted to do either as a kid. I don't. And if I have kids, I'll probably take much the same approach. You know, I'll kind of try to guide them early on, then it, you know, and it, like, and put them in situations where they can learn and succeed spiritually. But at a certain point, it's their own call, you know, like for all of us, you know, it's our own decision. And so that's nothing against or organized religion, but at the same time, I think that anytime you're in a situation where you believe so strongly that your way is the right way and another way isn't, that you're not, I think that you're in trouble when you're doing that.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Well, it's a remarkable project that you began a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, and the process is just fraught with all kinds of lessons, hard or not so hard, easy or not so easy. But again, it's just I think about, for example, what you've done here, and again what other guests on this program have done as far as compiling stories from their lives. I just finished interviewing a woman who basically put together childhood stories with morals to them from her own experiences to help others to sort of learn from that, learn from her lessons, learn from her experiences. And it was really fascinating how connected she and I were in terms of some of the experiences that she had.
Right.
I have to say that I even have a story of a dear friend who passed away in our home back in Phoenix before we moved here to Santa Barbara. And I say he passed away in our home simply because when they did take him to the hospital, they diagnosed that he had an aneurysm, and he was basically brain dead. They had him on life support for about 24 to 36 hours before they decided to remove life support. And he was the kind of friend, the kind of brother, if you will, who my wife and I had plans to go to Ireland that following February, and we were going to ask him to join us if it meant we would put his ticket on our credit card to have him come along with us. And I still remember the pain. I remember seeing dramas where somebody loses someone, and boy, they're angry and they're crying in the tears, but they're really pissed off, right?
Yeah, they're mad, right?
And I had that experience not too long. I mean, maybe the next day after they took him off life support, I'm laying there in bed with my wife when we're just trying to relax and sort of re-energize, and all of a sudden this stuff came up. And I don't know how I was actually able to be the observer at the same time, but I'm going, what the heck am I doing? Where is this coming from? You know, where has this been held up for so long?
Sometimes you just have to kind of leave it to the mystery and feel it and experience it and then move on. Because, you know as well, there's so much more out there, so much more happening than you and I can really understand and comprehend. You know, it's like the same deal with us using, 10% of our brain, whatever that statistic is, right? There's so much more going on that we don't see. I don't think we can be expected all the time to understand where it comes from. Sometimes when you're laying in bed with your wife there and those things come up, you just let them come up. When you start getting into the whys too much, that's what you become focused on.
You
become focused on answering as opposed to just a feeling thing and moving on,
Before we wrap up the program here, I want to ask you how people can get in touch with you. What is the website that you want people to go to?
It's Alex Woodard. We're putting everything under that umbrella now. So it's alexwoodard.com.
All right, Alex Woodard.
You'll find all the info about For the Sender and other projects that we're doing and, music and all that stuff. It's all there.
Well, we're looking forward to having you back again in early 2014, February or March, to talk more about the second half of the project. And it may just be another piece, not necessarily the other half. and then it ends.
For sure it's the second third, because I know there's going to be three of these books no matter what.
Oh, so fantastic. Well, we look forward to that. Before I let you go, three questions that I ask my guests. Number one is, who is Alex Woodard?
Oh, wow. Who is Alex Woodard? Well, I can tell you that I am a bundle of experiences, from my past and a future that I haven't quite realized yet that's coming at me. And other than, you know, I do happen to like dogs a lot and horses and being out in the world. That's what I'm about now.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
My connection is the number one thing. And I'd love for people, for that guy who's in an apartment, you know, in Wichita or whatever, and he's not where he wants to be or where he thought he'd be by now. My greatest achievement would be to have him read one of my stories or hear a song or something and inspire and motivate him into some kind of action. But I just want to help people out.
And how powerful are we as human beings?
I think as humans we are extremely powerful in our ability to heal ourselves and to elicit change in the world around us, because we have these brains and we have this ability and these tools with which we can make beautiful things happen. At the same time, I think we're only as powerful as we are open to that kind of greater source that's out there. And you can call it God or higher self or consciousness or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the more in line we are, I believe, with that, the more powerful we are. Yeah. And we're really only as powerful as in line as we are with that kind of divine source. And I think as more people move towards that, you know, you're going to see a lot of beautiful change happening in the world. I really feel like there's kind of a push towards that right now.
You and I are both optimists, and we're going to keep the faith, as it were. Alex Woodard, my guest, For the Sender, 4 letters, 12 songs, 1 story. Thank you once again for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story and sharing yours and those of others as well that have experienced the storms of life and have persevered and have moved forward. Again, thank you so much.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me on.
Here's a reminder that you can go to alexwoodard.com. That's alexwoodard.com. Find out more about For the Sender, both the original and the second book and music CD that's going to be coming out in February 2014. And I'm Richard Dugan, and we'll talk to you on the other side of Christmas. And until then, love to Lal.